Okay, so I'm going to be doing the first of a series of talks on positive emotion from our system of practice, and also on Ratnasambhava, the yellow Buddha of the south. And I'm drawing on a handout which I'm going to be putting online tonight, so you can look that up tonight. Okay, so first a few words about Ratnasambhava. So it's the new figure on the shrine. And he represents many things. And the one that I'm sort of particularly picking out today amongst his many qualities is imagination. So sort of representing imagination, the imaginal faculty, as Bhante's described it. And you may be aware that each male Buddha of the five Buddha mandala has a female consort, a female Buddha consort. Now, the female consort of Ratnasambhava, her name is Mamaki, and her particular wisdom is what's called the mind-making or mind-making wisdom, by which she sees all beings as herself. So this is actually quite unusual in the Buddhist tradition. Usually, Buddhism sort of emphasizes no self, so you don't see yourself as all self, let alone anybody else. But actually, Mamaki sees everybody as herself. But when you think about it, this is just another way of overcoming this sense of separation and division between ourselves and others. And it's a sort of imaginative transcending of that sense of separateness and division. So she imagines all beings as herself. And this transcending separation is a way into sort of positive emotion. And there's a sort of intimacy in that, a real sort of heart connection intimacy. So sometimes it's said that with positive emotion, the heart center is everywhere. So I think Mamaki sort of represents this. It's sort of everyone is kind of at the center of her heart. That's herself. She's very intimate with everyone. So there's a lovely quote from the poet Shelley, which I'll drop in at this point, sort of just drawing out the way in which imagination is a way into love, into positive emotion. And Shelley says, "The great secret of morals is love. A man, to be greatly good, must imagine intensely and comprehensively. He must put himself in the place of another and many others. The pains and pleasures of his species must become his own." So that was William Shelley, really drawing out the way in which the imagination is the way into empathy, responsiveness, positive emotion, love. And the other quote I wanted to include at this point is from the 7th Dalai Lama. You may know that the current Dalai Lama is the 14th in a series of incarnations. And halfway back, the 7th Dalai Lama wrote this song. And the first stanza of the song goes like this. "An image of a sun enthroned in the heavens, radiating 1,000 beams of light. Were we to shower bright rays of love upon all beings, how excellent." I'll just say that again. "An image of a sun enthroned in the heavens, radiating 1,000 beams of light. Were we to shower bright rays of love upon all beings, how excellent." So for me, that's a sort of imaginative evocation of the last stage of the Brahmaviharas, of Metta Bhavana, but any of the other Brahmaviharas as well, Mudita Bhavana, Karana Bhavana, Upekkha Bhavana. There's this quality of radiance. And it's a sort of state of awareness infused with love, infused with metta, infused with kindness, that's just completely open, that would respond with metta to whatever it encountered. and yet is not caught up or tied up or entangled with anything. So you can see here we've captured the sort of intimacy and personal connection of the sort of first stages of the metta bhavana, but also the sort of spaciousness, radiance, unobstructedness of the last stage as well. So that's drawing in Ratnasambhava and his consort Manaki into the theme of positive emotion. So I want to sort of move on to something more about the practice. So a suggestion of how to engage with the practice of the metta bhavana, or more broadly with positive emotion practice. And in a nutshell, the approach is one of turning towards. It's something you may well have heard me or others, Badra perhaps particularly, describing before, turning towards experience. So we're bringing the sensitivity of positive emotion to our own experience. So when we encounter whatever's uppermost in our experience, whatever's particularly calling our attention, rather than completely identifying with it, we can regard this as a sort of something that's felt within our experience. Okay. We might previously have related to some of these aspects of experience as hindrances. So there are this classic list of five hindrances. There's sense desire, there's aversion, anxiety, sloth and torpor, and doubt. But rather than seeing these as hindrances, we could just see them as something in my experience. So something in me is feeling anxious. Something in me is feeling angry. Something in me is feeling very uncertain and doubtful. Whatever it is. Okay? It might, of course, always be a very positive something. Something in me is feeling very open. Something in me is feeling very loving, very joyful, very expansive, very radiant. Let's be open to that as well. So relating to these aspects of our experience as something in me, we can sort of bring a quality of, bring our natural human capacity to be with, to bear. So it's something you're perhaps most apparent with our friends, that it's just a natural human capacity that we all have to just be present with another person, another human being. So we're going to drop in a poem at this point by Rumi, which you may be familiar with. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honourably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them all at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So that's from Rumi. He's actually a Sufi poet, but it really captures the whole approach of turning towards experience, whether it's uplifting and joyous or difficult and painful. And to unpack this, particularly this last stanza where Rumi is saying that each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So it's like each aspect of our experience carries its own sort of inner wisdom. So if it's, say, an anxiety or an annoyance, something we might have called a hindrance in the past, the inner wisdom that it's bringing to us is it's a sense of knowing what's unresolved. Yeah, so it's returning to our attention So these, let's just use the word hindrances. These hindrances kind of, they come back, don't they? Okay. So in terms of meditation, you may be familiar with, well, with firstly with the five hindrances that are fairly gross, fairly sort of immediately apparent and obvious hindrances. As we get more concentrated, there's a description of what are called subtle hindrances. So it's not so apparent whether it's even a hindrance at all. And one of the subtle hindrances is stray thoughts. So if something's calling your attention, if there's a persistent thought that's kind of just there, perhaps the first thing to assume is that, oh, it's just a stray thought, just let it go. If, on the other hand, it's sort of something that's kind of got a more of an underlying drive to it, that's something that's kind of more articulating annoyance or articulating anxiety, articulating some sort of emotional drive, then it will keep coming back. So that's where the something in me that's anxious, for example, has an inner wisdom. It keeps coming back because it knows what's unresolved. It keeps returning to our attention, bringing us again the opportunity to integrate. So there's something there which hasn't been resolved, which hasn't been fully felt through, which hasn't been integrated, and that something knows what is unintegrated, unresolved, not turned towards. And so it just keeps coming back to give us this opportunity again, an opportunity to integrate. So you can see that positive emotion and integration are very much in the same space. So you can think of this turning towards practice as a positive emotion practice that enables us to integrate more deeply and fully. So we're kind of bridging this gap between the first stage of resistant practice integration and the second stage, positive emotion. Okay, so when I turn towards some difficulty, I'm going to sort of just pick the example of anxiety. What I want to bring to it is what in Buddhism is called wise attention, as opposed to unwise attention. Now, it really strikes me that the quality that distinguishes wise attention from unwise attention is awareness. So if it's anxiety, for example, unwise attention would be getting very caught up in the anxiety, perhaps trying to sort of figure out a plan, just kind of being in a bit of a sort of loop with it and getting more and more anxious. So that's a sort of attention, but it's a very small and sort of tight sort of attention. It's caught up. Conversely, wise attention has a quality of openness and expansiveness to it. It's got at least enough openness to be with rather than be in the anxiety. So think of it as like sitting alongside. Yeah? So imagine a friend of mine is feeling anxious. There she is, feeling anxious, sitting on the sofa. I can just sit alongside her and be with her in that anxiety without actually feeling driven to try and come up with a solution, come up with a strategy, sort all their problems out. Rather than that, I can just kind of keep her company. So to do that with aspects of our own experience, we just need a little bit more space, okay? We don't need to be galactic in our expansiveness. We just need a little bit more space. And it's one of the very encouraging and positive qualities of awareness is that there's always a little bit more space in awareness. Yeah. It's always possible to bring awareness to whatever the experience is. And then when we're doing that, it's a sort of quality of fully welcoming, fully allowing it to be there for just as long as it needs to be. And in Rumi's words, going even beyond allowing and welcoming it in. So we bring to bear this quality of being with, or turning towards. It's a quality of awareness, and it brings it with it a sort of attentiveness. And it's an attention that's got a sort of sensitivity to it. So it's not a sort of brutish and cold awareness, it's a more kind of tender, sensitive, in the end even intimate sort of awareness. And that sensitivity in practice includes a sort of feeling into the sort of texture and the nuance of the actual lived experience. Yeah? So bringing a welcoming attitude and really kind of feeling into exploring the lived experience. So this is wise attention. It's attention with that spaciousness, with that sensitivity. And what we're turning towards particularly is kind of what's underneath the content. So what's most apparent is liable to be the content of the thinking. Okay. So if I'm feeling anxious, there'll be something in particular and I'm just about, and I'm probably going to be trying to figure it out, come up with a strategy, sort my plans out. So that's the content of thinking. But underneath that, there's going to be an underlying emotion, in this case anxiety, and that's what we're turning towards. Yeah. That's what we're being with. So don't feel there's any need to try and come up with an answer. And it's possible to sort of carry on feeling down in a way. So there's a sort of feeling down from the content of the thoughts into the underlying emotion. Underneath that, there's a sort of feeling tone. Okay. So feeling tone, in this case, probably quite painful. Dukkha. There's a quality of dukkha in there. And so that's sort of, in a way, that's sort of feeling down another layer. And the dukkha is not just going to be arbitrary, it's not just going to have appeared out of nowhere. It's, you know, we feel it's a painful experience because this painful experience is there because we feel hurt. So there's a sense of hurt. And then under that, there's maybe a sort of, as you sort of feel down, you might just get to a sort of rawness. It's just like you're getting to the level of sensation, sensitivity to the sort of raw sensation that's going on. And then we're down into that quality of sensitivity. So as we're sort of feeling down, we start with something that's kind of more conceptual, rational, content of thinking. Under that is an emotion. That's got a feeling tone to it. It's got a felt, feeling quality to it. Under that, there's a sort of, a sort of feeling of hurt, a sense of hurt, something that we're kind of responding to. And as you feel down, you get sort of into that quality of rawness and open, and just sensitivity, to coming back to sensitivity. And the point is that sensitivity is the quality of awareness. It's one of the main qualities of awareness. So you're coming back to awareness as you do this. So it's a very different attitude to hindrances, what's a very common attitude to hindrances, that I want to be aware, which I'm identifying with mindful, which I'm identifying with a very specific focus. So I'm breathing. Here's this hindrance, it's getting in the way of my awareness, and I want to get rid of it, I want to eradicate it. If that works, that's great, but if it keeps coming back, well, that means that's not working. It's particularly calling your attention. So here's an alternative. Here's a way of actually turning towards that part of you that's feeling anxious in this case, feeling into it, feeling your way down, and you come back to a quality of awareness. You come back to the sensitivity, which is the quality of awareness. Okay. So you can sort of see how it works the same way with other states of mind. Say with annoyance, you might be sort of rehearsing an argument in your mind. Underneath that, there's a quality of annoyance, emotion of annoyance. That's going to have a painful feeling tone. So you're just sort of feeling your way down through that sort of layer. Now, a word about if you find this difficult. So there's said to be two sort of difficulties in meditation. Either it's all too much or there's nothing there. Taking the first one, if you find that actually it's a really big deal and finding it very difficult to be with this experience, it's something that's actually really worrying me and I'm finding it very difficult to turn towards that. Okay, the thing to do in that case is just kind of pick up this part of you that's finding it very difficult. Okay, something in me is finding it really difficult to engage with this anxiety, to actually be with it. It's not something I feel able or resourced to be with. So you're bringing that aspect of your experience to the centre of your attention. There's this aspect that's finding it really difficult. Okay, something in me is finding this practice really difficult, so I'll turn towards that. I'll turn towards that something. And you may well find that actually that's something I can do. So there's this really difficult, big issue. I'm really finding it very painful, and I don't feel I've got the resource and capacity to turn towards that, to engage with that. Okay, so there's something in me that's finding that a real struggle, that's finding that difficult. Bring my attention to that. Yeah. Bring the empathy to that. Bring the sensitivity to that. You'll find that as you do that, you can always kind of take a step back in that way. And you'll find that in the end, you come to that aspect of your experience that you can be with, that you can bring a sort of welcoming, kindly awareness towards, that you can just be with in that sort of empathic and sympathetic sort of way. And this is, in a way, that's the sort of the art of the first stage of the Metta Bhavana. It's finding a place from which you can be with your experience with kindness, with love, with empathy. And it's maybe not the place that's most kind of banging on your door. Maybe it's another place that's finding it all a bit difficult. Okay. But finding the place where you can be with your experience with love. It's also finding the point where you can actually practice effectively. It's finding the sort of pivot point, if you like. A lot of the art of meditation is finding that point in relation to your experience where you can practice effectively, where you can really turn towards and be with kindness, with empathy. Okay, so lastly, thinking of the whole thing as an opportunity. Yeah. So it's quite a different relationship than thinking of it as a distraction, thinking of it as an obstacle, thinking of it as something which makes practice impossible. Thinking of what we might otherwise call hindrances as an opportunity. So not think of it as something that's getting in the way, preventing us from experiencing states of absorption, preventing us from integrating, preventing us from experiencing positive emotion. Thinking of them as the opportunity, particularly the opportunity to integrate what's so far not fully addressed, not fully been addressed. So I'm repeating what I said earlier, but it's like they do have this inner wisdom. They know in at least one instance what's still an issue for us, where we need to bring awareness. And there's this revolutionary, transformative capacity in awareness. One of Bhante Sangharakshita's aphorisms is, awareness is revolutionary. Awareness is revolutionary. It's transformative. And in that context, with the word awareness, it's kindly awareness. It's not a cold, indifferent awareness. It's not a analytical awareness. It's not a brutish, insensitive awareness. It's a very kindly, warm, sensitive, nuanced sort of awareness. And it's revolutionary. So in this sense, these hindrances are a guide from beyond. From beyond what? Well, they're a guide from beyond our current sense of identity. That's why we think, I don't want this. This isn't me. This is not who I am. I don't want to be angry. I'm not an angry person. I want to. I don't want to know about the anger. So that's a sense of it's beyond, because it's beyond what our sort of comfortable or habitual self view is. Yeah. So it's beyond what we identify with. Our current sense of identity, which is another way of saying that it's beyond our current degree of integration. It's from outside who we like to think we are and what we're kind of comfortable with, what's kind of folded in to our identity and our experience. So beyond our current degree of integration. And it's beyond what's been fully felt through. It's something which hasn't been fully told towards, hasn't been fully felt through. One of my teacher Prakash's favourite phrases is that the deepest wish of any feeling is to be fully felt and fully felt through. And in this context, feeling also includes emotion. The deepest wish of any emotional response is to be fully turned towards, fully experienced, fully understood, fully felt through, felt into. So these are guides from beyond, and they're knocking on the door of the guest house, calling upon our attention, bringing an opportunity, bringing the gift of an opportunity to bring positive emotion to bear, to deepen our understanding of ourselves and to integrate more fully. And those things, you know, bringing positive emotion to bear, deepening our understanding of ourselves, integrating more fully, doing those things is moving towards enlightened awareness. So sometimes the three jewels, the Buddha, the ideal of enlightenment, which we aspire, and the Dharma and the Sangha, they can seem very remote. But actually, it's not that there's a gulf to be crossed between us and the three jewels. There's actually a continuum. And I think for me, this is very apparent with awareness. So if you think of the Buddha jewel as enlightened awareness, there's a continuum between human awareness that we all experience just by virtue of being human and enlightened awareness. It's not, I'm not saying it's the same thing, I'm saying that it's continuous, and that this process of integration, this process of bringing positive emotion to bear, deepening our understanding of ourselves, integrating more fully, is a process of moving towards enlightened awareness from whatever sort of quality of awareness we're experiencing here and now. Okay, so that's it in a nutshell, and I have one little suggestion for something to take away with you and practice during the week, which I'll remind you again of, I think, in the second half. So my suggestion is, if a difficult emotion turns up during the week, try turning towards it, try being with it, try sort of just spending some time alongside it with it. If you've got this sense of what the difference is between that and getting caught up in. Yeah. So it's like a middle way in a way. So one extreme would be to get completely caught up in and wrapped up in and involved with, let's say, feeling anxious. The other extreme would be to try and push it away, to try and eradicate it or deny it, or just make it stop. So the middle way here is the middle way of awareness. It's the middle way of being with. So let's leave it there for the talk. So there's an opportunity now if anyone's got any questions you want to ask, if anything wasn't clear, if you'd like to hear a bit more about something that I've said, then there's a space now, there's opportunity for you.
Yeah, so with positive emotion, when I first sort of read it, I guess I felt that it was about being positive to others, but I guess it's as much about being positive to yourself. Is that that's what you spoke about tonight, really?
Absolutely,
the
yes.
The idea that you have to look after yourself as well as to be able to look after others, I guess.
Yeah. So to take the metta bhavana as we usually practice it.
Yeah.
So it starts with oneself, and we're bringing positive emotion to bear with one's own experience. So you could relate to most of what I've said today as an approach to the first stage of the metta bhavana.
Yeah.
But then the second stage and the third stage and the fourth stage is like bringing a positive emotional attitude to your relationship with someone else. Now often they're not necessarily that different, because a lot of our emotions are tied up in relationships. So if I'm feeling really annoyed, I'm probably feeling really annoyed with somebody.
In the same percent.
It's not 100%, but it's you know, definitely probable. So the fourth stage of the metabard now is a turning towards of that emotion of annoyance, for example. I haven't emphasised the positive, but I think it's good to emphasise the positive as well, so to balance it out. It's not all hindrance. There's going to be lots of rich, positive experience there as well. So there'll be love, metta, friendship, celebration, delight, enjoyment, openness, expansiveness, curiosity, interest, that sort of thing. It's all going to be there as well. And yeah, so again, in the second stage, it's an opportunity perhaps to just really delight in something else that's going on. Yeah,
well, one other point on the metabar, I guess, where you say it's for yourself, so that's something I was thinking about, because when you're thinking about someone and you're wishing them luck, they haven't got a clue that you're doing that. So it has to be for yourself, doesn't it, realistically, I guess. The stranger that you pick has no idea that you're thinking about, like, good wishes to them at that moment in time.
Yeah, so yeah. So meditation has been described as working on the mind with the mind. So yeah. We're sort of moving our own awareness in the direction of more emotionally positive awareness, more insightful awareness, in the direction of enlightened awareness. So in that sense, meditation is something one does for oneself. There's a huge array of opportunities in the 23 hours when we're not meditating during the day. To put that into practice. Yeah,
and already though, so you might be doing it for yourself at that moment in time, but that might make you better at looking after others away from meditation, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think in my experience it does have an effect on others. If they don't know you're doing it.
Yeah.
I found that particularly with the person I've been having difficulty with.
Okay.
Obviously something in me changes. Doing it, but the next time I see them, they're often smiling at me, and they wouldn't have been. So I think there's chemistry and there's all sorts of stuff going on there which we don't always quite realise.
Do you think this is a question, please? Do you think there's a difference between what you might call irrational fears or unwelcome thoughts that arise apparently spontaneously from nowhere, which this would work very well. I can see that model working very well with that. And on the other hand, the difficult thoughts and experiences that are prompted by something external to yourself, a challenge in work, a decision you've got to take, for example.
Right.
And the reason that you're perplexed or anxious or wound up or something is not only of what's going on inside, but what's going on outside. You know, you've got to make a decision. So therefore, part of the solution to the second kind of difficulty is to make the decision. Now, I suppose I can see that this conception of a positive emotion would work for that as well. I suppose my question would be, how do you integrate that with the decision making, the decision that's got to be taken? Do you do it separately? Do you do it?
Yeah.
Do you start off the positive emotion and then say, here's the decision, all bound up together? That would be my question.
I think I see where you're coming from, yeah. I mean, this is a practice, and it's engaging the sort of more sensitive, more feelingful, more emotional side of our nature, of our human capacity. We also have a rational mind, which is quite capable of thinking through, weighing up the pros and cons and coming to a decision. So, and I'm not sort of saying don't do that, I'm sort of saying this is a different thing, this is meditation. I suppose I'd just say engaging with this effectively can get you to a point where things aren't so much of an issue anymore. They don't have the same emotional kind of thorn in them. There's not the same reactivity. So we're sort of, another way of putting it, to use some favourite language of Sangharakshita's, is we're moving out of a reactive mind into a more creative mind. So creative mind is one that isn't reactive. It's not driven instinctually to sort of react to triggers, that gives you more of an opportunity to, it's sort of a freedom of movement. So one of the descriptions of a quality of absorption that you can get into in meditation is called the directionless samadhi, the directionless absorption. And the quality of that is that it doesn't have ruts. You know, it's not, it doesn't have the sort of habitual responses and reactions that perhaps more familiar to us. So it's more of an open space of possibility. And I sort of think that from that sort of less reactive, less habituated sort of state of mind, then there's more freedom for your rational mind to weigh up the actual pros and cons and come to a decision without being pulled by an emotional reaction in a different way. So I sort of generally I think it complements. Yeah. It doesn't replace the complement. Okay. So on to Kivijani with
yes. A... Yes, so...